Imagine you are sitting at your desk, casually researching a new software vendor for your team. You haven't filled out a single form.
Right, zero form.
Zero forms. You haven't typed your name into a chat box. All you did was spend like maybe 3 minutes reading their pricing page.
Just browsing.
Exactly, just browsing. But the next morning, you don't just get a generic cold email. You get a highly specific message from their sales team, and it references the exact integration problem your company is currently trying to solve.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, complete with a case study tailored specifically to your industry. I mean, it feels a little like magic, or, maybe a little bit like surveillance, depending on how you look at it.
It definitely blurs that line for sure. But behind that seemingly magical interaction is just a staggering amount of infrastructure. The days of buying a massive list of emails and just, load them into a software cannon to spray into the digital void, those days are effectively over.
Which brings us to the mission for today's deep dive. Today is April 20th, 2026. And whether you are leading a sales team, architecting marketing campaigns, or you're just someone tired of receiving tone-deaf corporate pitches, we are going to pull apart the hidden machinery of how businesses actually find, target, and win clients today.
It's a fascinating shift.
It really is. And we are working from a brilliant, comprehensive strategy guide. It's titled B2B Lead Generation in 2026: Definition and Strategy. And it's authored by Lauren Popeck from Reach Marketing.
Yeah, and the central premise of Popeck's analysis is that lead generation has, well, it's fundamentally shed its old identity. We really have to stop thinking of it as a series of isolated marketing campaigns. In the 2026 landscape, lead generation is this continuous, deeply integrated revenue architecture.
Okay, so it's not just a campaign anymore.
Not at all. It is a study in organizational efficiency and human behavior, operating at just an incredible scale.
Let's ground this in the real world, because the source points out that to understand this new machinery, we have to rethink the very definition of a lead.
We do.
Most of us grew up in the industry thinking of a lead as, a contact form completion. Somebody traded their email address for a webinar link, therefore, boom, they are a lead.
Exactly, that was the old standard.
But Popeck redefines it entirely. She says a lead today is a verified business entity with identifiable purchase potential and traceable engagement behavior.
Notice the phrasing there, traceable engagement behavior. That is a monumental shift. The system, it isn't waiting for you to introduce yourself anymore.
It's already watching.
Right. It is actively monitoring the digital ecosystem for signals. What's fascinating here is that moving from a single acquisition event to tracking continuous behavioral data, it means companies are constantly looking for alignment and intent long before a prospect ever realizes they're being marketed to.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want to try an analogy here to see if we can visualize this.
Go for it.
So the old way of getting leads felt a bit like setting up a lemonade stand. You put up a sign, you stand on the corner, and you just hope someone thirsty walks by.
Right, very passive.
Super passive. But reading through the architecture Popeck describes, the 2026 way, it sounds like we're building a highly engineered municipal water treatment and distribution plant.
That is a great way to look at it.
Yeah, because instead of just processing whatever water flows in, it's this massive network of sensors and filtration grids. It's constantly testing the pressure, filtering out the debris, and, measuring flow rates before a drop ever even reaches the tap.
I'll actually take that analogy a step further.
Okay.
The old lemonade stand didn't care about the quality of the thirst, right? Just the
Yeah.
transaction.
Just hand over the quarter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But your municipal water plant metaphor works perfectly because a modern revenue architecture is obsessed with filtration and telemetry. For an advanced B2B audience, we are all familiar with the legacy filters.
Right, the MQLs, marketing qualified leads.
Yeah, MQLs and SQLs, sales qualified leads, those were the old ways of gating prospects based on surface level interactions, like they downloaded an ebook.
Which doesn't mean much anymore.
No, it doesn't. But the 2026 infrastructure relies on vastly more sophisticated categories, specifically PQLs, product qualified leads.
Okay, let's dig into the mechanics of a PQL because this is where the theory becomes highly actionable for anyone listening. We aren't just talking about someone who clicked a link, right?
Far from it. A product qualified lead is generated when a user demonstrates actual, undeniable value through product interaction.
Give me an example of that.
Okay, imagine a user on a freemium version of a project management tool. The system's telemetry notices that this specific user has logged in every single day for a week.
Okay, so high engagement.
High engagement. And then they just try to invite a fourth team member, but they hit the free tier limit.
Oh, I
So they immediately click the upgrade button to check the pricing. That behavioral footprint right there is a PQL.
Wow.
The product itself did the selling. The user organically raised their hand.
And because the system caught that signal in real time, it just bypasses the traditional marketing fluff entirely. It flags them as a high-intent buyer right away, but the source goes even further with intent-based leads.
Oh, yeah. This is where it gets really advanced.
Right, because these are companies that haven't even touched your product yet. They haven't filled out a form. They haven't logged into a freemium tier. How does the system filter for intent when there is zero direct interaction?
Well, that relies on external behavioral tracking across digital environments. The architecture uses third-party data providers to monitor when employees from a specific company are suddenly researching particular topics.
Wait, really? Just researching?
Yeah, just researching. So if five different people from a mid-sized logistics firm start aggressively reading articles about supply chain data integration across, say, various industry blogs,
the system sees that.
The system registers a huge spike in intent. That logistics firm becomes an account level lead.
So you don't even know exactly who to call yet.
Exactly. You don't have a specific name, but you know the organization is actively looking for a solution.
That is wild. So we have this massive sensor network capturing these signals, whether it's product usage or external research. The natural question is, how does this infrastructure actually move them from a digital blip on a radar to a signed contract?
Right, the actual pipeline.
Yeah. The source outlines a multi-stage system, and the journey is honestly pretty intense.
It is. The journey requires moving the prospect through six sequential phases. It begins with target identification.
Right, profiling them.
Yes, profiling the ideal target using firmographic and technographic data. From there, it moves into attraction and awareness, then into engagement and capture.
That's where you're evaluating fit.
Right, exactly. That leads right into qualification and scoring. And finally, it transitions into nurturing and progression, and ultimately, the sales handoff and conversion.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me, though. When we look at these six steps, my instinct is to assume the hardest part is the very beginning.
Getting their attention.
Yeah. Getting attention at step two in an incredibly noisy digital world seems like an impossible bottleneck. But Popick explicitly warns that performance depends entirely on how effectively transitions are managed between these stages.
She does. The friction point is internal.
So is the biggest bottleneck actually internal corporate dysfunction where marketing and sales just drop the baton at step six?
That is exactly it. The failure point is almost always inside the building. The data strongly supports your pushback there.
Right.
Think about the handoff between marketing and sales.
It's notoriously terrible at most companies.
Right. If marketing is scoring a lead based on vanity metrics, say, a prospect simply opened an email and they hand that to sales as a quote-unquote hot lead.
The sales rep gets on the phone with someone who has zero intention of buying.
Exactly. Which creates a scenario we've all seen. Marketing thinks they are knocking it out of the park because they delivered 2,000 leads this quarter.
But the sales team is completely furious because none of those leads are viable.
The pipeline is full, but revenue is totally flat. That is the exact definition of internal friction.
So how do we fix it?
Well, the solution Popick emphasizes is the implementation of strict alignment mechanisms. Without shared definitions for MQLs and SQLs, it just fails. And she specifically points to closed-loop reporting.
Break down the mechanics of closed-loop reporting for us. How does that actually fix the friction between two departments that historically kind of hate each other?
It forces accountability. In a fragmented system, marketing tracks a lead until it's handed over, and then they just walk away.
Right, not my problem anymore.
Exactly. But in a closed-loop architecture, the CRM, the customer relationship management software, is wired so that when a sales rep finally closes a deal, maybe 6 months later, the revenue data flows backward instantly.
Oh, I see.
It traces back to the specific marketing touchpoint, the specific intent signal, and the exact channel that brought the lead in.
So it forces both departments to look at the exact same version of the truth.
Precisely. Marketing can no longer claim success just for generating traffic. They are evaluated on the closed-won revenue their systems initiated.
That makes so much sense. So to feed this incredibly precise closed-loop machine, you obviously need the right raw materials. You need channels to bring people into the ecosystem.
You do. You have to fill the top of the funnel.
And the strategy guide emphasizes that channel diversification is absolutely mandatory to stabilize a pipeline. No single channel works perfectly.
Right.
But it also presents this fascinating comparative evaluation of these channels, basically proving that not all leads are created equal.
They really aren't. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the evaluation grid in the source material highlights a massive trap that companies fall into.
The volume trap.
The volume trap, exactly. Many organizations lean heavily on high-volume channels like paid media, you know, sponsored social media ads, pay-per-click campaigns.
Because they can flood your system with leads overnight.
They can, but the catch is the intent quality.
Right. So what does this all mean for the vanity metrics companies love to brag about? If a channel brings in 10,000 low-intent leads, isn't that just creating a massive pile of digital garbage for the system to process?
That is exactly what it's doing. If you click a sponsored ad while scrolling through your feed on your phone just because the graphic was clever.
My intent to actually sit down and negotiate a six-figure software contract is probably hovering near zero. I'm just a tourist.
Right, and tourists clog up the machinery. A high volume of low-intent leads actually increases your customer acquisition cost.
Because your sales team is burning hundreds of hours chasing ghosts.
Exactly. That's why Popic identifies organic search and product-led channels as the ultimate sweet spots.
High volume and high intent.
Yes. And referrals have low volume, but very high intent and short sales cycles. But product-led acquisition is so powerful in 2026.
Which brings us back to that PQL scenario we discussed earlier with the freemium software.
It does. Product-led channels, like free trials or freemium tools, they generate organic usage-based qualification signals.
Rather than forcing prospects to jump through artificial marketing hoops.
Right. The prospect is organically qualifying themselves. You aren't forcing them to download a gated ebook just so you can harvest their email.
That gated ebook model always feels so transactional anyway. You know, the moment you type in your email to get the PDF, you are signing up for a barrage of automated follow-ups.
You don't want a sales call. You just wanted the PDF.
Exactly. Which is precisely why traditional static nurturing is just dead in the 2026 model.
Completely dead.
Let's unpack that, because this leads us into what the source calls the 2026 personalization engine.
This is where the tech gets really impressive.
Yeah. Because the old way was static segmentation. A company would say, okay, anyone who downloads an ebook about finance gets put into the finance email sequence, and they get one email every Tuesday for 6 weeks.
Right. It was completely blind to what the user was actually doing. Static segmentation treats the buyer like a demographic rather than an active participant.
So how does the 2026 model change that?
In this modern architecture, personalization is driven entirely by real-time behavioral signals. Not static segments like industry or company size.
Give me an example of how that looks to the user.
Well, it means dynamic website experiences based on visitor intent or timed outreach triggered by specific intent signals. The system isn't putting you on a predetermined track. It is dynamically responding to your actions.
So instead of an automated system that blindly blasts out "Dear first name," this is more like a silent digital concierge.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it notices you've been reading about data integration for 10 minutes, and it quietly slips a highly relevant case study right onto your desk.
That concierge analogy captures the user experience perfectly. But, you know, this raises an important question.
What's that?
How does that concierge actually know what to do? The technical requirement to pull that off is immense. The operational backbone of this whole endeavor is unified data infrastructure.
Right. Because if the concierge hands the IT director a brochure meant for a junior graphic designer, the illusion shatters.
It doesn't look helpful. It looks incompetent.
Exactly. It's alienating.
It is. So to prevent that, organizations are deploying massive data infrastructures, CRMs, intent data sources, and highly sophisticated enrichment tools.
How do those enrichment tools work in real time?
Let's say a prospect gives you the tiniest breadcrumb, just a corporate email address. In a fraction of a second, an enrichment tool takes that email, pings external databases, and automatically appends the lead profile.
With what kind of information?
With their company's annual revenue, their current tech stack, recent hiring trends, and their exact job title. It builds a 50-point bossier before the web page even finishes loading.
That is incredible and a little terrifying.
That's all fed directly into the CRM and the marketing automation platform simultaneously. And this unified data is what makes account-based strategies possible, especially for high-value B2B markets.
Because in those environments, the focus shifts to targeting entire organizations, right? Not just one person.
Exactly. You have to convince a buying committee.
Right. The classic complex sale. You need the end user to love the interface, the IT director to approve the security protocols, and the CFO to sign off on the budget.
The personalization engine coordinates customized messaging to all of them at once. It prioritizes depth within a single account over a broad, shallow approach.
So the CFO gets ROI content while the IT director gets API security white papers.
Exactly. It's a synchronized assault on the problem, tailored to the individual stakeholder, but aimed at the unified goal of closing the account.
But you know, the strategy guide is very clear that even with this incredible technology, the enrichment tool, the closed-loop reporting, the synchronized account-based marketing, these systems still fail.
They do, frequently.
If we have a perfectly engineered concierge fueled by diverse channels, why do lead generation efforts still fail so often? Where does the whole thing fall apart?
Well, it rarely falls apart because of a single catastrophic error. The failures are almost always systemic inefficiencies that compound over time.
What are the critical risks Popick lists?
She outlines a few. An over-reliance on one single acquisition channel that suddenly dries up. Poor qualification standards where those MQL definitions slip.
And then digital garbage floods the system again.
Exactly. Or incomplete data where those enrichment tools fail to fire and the personalization engine suddenly goes blind. And of course, delayed sales follow-up.
It really is a domino effect. If the data enrichment fails, the personalization fails. If the personalization fails, the prospect drops out and the pipeline dries up.
And the most insidious part is how companies try to cover up these failures by celebrating the wrong metrics. They contrast surface-level metrics with true KPIs.
This is a perfect moment to ask you, listening to this right now, to reflect on your own workplace. Think about the all-hands meetings.
Oh, this is a great point.
Right. How many companies are still throwing parties over high website traffic or a record number of form submissions while their actual lead-to-opportunity conversion rate is quietly tanking in the background?
Too many. Surface-level metrics are a comfortable lie. Traffic does not equal intent. Form submissions do not equal revenue.
So what are the true pipeline-centric key performance indicators we should be looking at?
The ultimate metrics of a mature 2026 system are things like the lead-to-opportunity conversion rate. You have to measure the true cost per qualified lead.
You must track the customer acquisition costs, the CAC.
Yeah, exactly. You track the CAC against the lifetime value of the account. You measure the actual pipeline value generated, not the sheer volume of noise you created.
So the synthesis of Lauren Popek's entire strategy guide really boils down to a fundamental shift in perspective.
It does. Lead generation in 2026 is defined by integration, not individual tactics.
The organizations that dominate their markets are the ones that treat lead generation as an ongoing infrastructure project. They aren't just launching isolated campaigns.
Right. They treat it as a machine. They ensure their channels, their data stack, and their internal workflows function as a single cohesive unit to achieve predictable growth.
And those that treat it as a series of isolated campaigns, they just fail.
They burn capital without getting anywhere.
It is a complete paradigm shift from where the industry started. We are looking at the absolute operationalization of human behavior. Every click, every second spent hovering over a pricing tier, it's all being ingested and scored.
The precision is incredibly efficient and, frankly, a little daunting.
It really is. So, to wrap this up, the next time you find yourself browsing a vendor's website or reading a long-form technical asset to solve a problem at work, I want you to remember the machinery we just unpacked today.
You're in the machine.
You are. You are not just casually reading an article. Mm-hmm. You are actively moving through a meticulously integrated six-stage infrastructure. Your intent is being measured in real time.
Your behavioral footprint is being analyzed.
And that silent digital concierge is already calculating the exact piece of data to place in front of you next. Modern B2B lead generation truly is a behavioral science.
Which leaves us with a rather profound and maybe slightly unsettling thought to mull over as you explore this on your own.
Lay it on us.
If personalization in 2026 relies entirely on tracking our real-time behavioral data, and companies are using these predictive models to map our exact buying intent, at what point does perfectly optimized lead generation cross the line?
Cross the line from what?
From intelligently anticipating our business needs to actively engineering our purchasing decisions before we even consciously realize we have a problem.